Honorable members, ladies and gentlemen, good morning. Can we get settled so that we can start our meeting? I would like to welcome you to this meeting. This is a meeting that is leading us towards the end of the mile. And I think it's important for us and the department to ensure that the information that we give is pointed, because we don't have time to run around in circles. We don't have time for toing and froing. As I said, these meetings are taking us to the end. We are going to the finish line. And we are appealing as the portfolio committee to the department to give us pointed answers. And as I was coming to this meeting, I was like, I'm disheartened, because the issues that you've been raising, I was looking through my notes from 2014 when we first came here, and looking through my notes, I'm like, we need to be taken to a psychiatric hospital, because we've been saying the same thing over and over and over again. And it's not good for anybody. It can't be good for you as the department. It's worse for us as the members of the portfolio committee. It's not nice to say one thing over and over again. And as we go towards the end of our term, we look back, and when I personally evaluate the work that we have done, I come to a conclusion that any portfolio committee is as good as its department. And in our case, I think we need to analyze as members to see how each of the members see the 5 years that we've been here. From the last meeting, I've received a number of complaints, inquiries, you name them, they are here, from the stakeholders of the Department of Arts and Culture. And from the onset, as the portfolio committee, we were clear to say to the department, we don't want people to bank on us as the portfolio committee. Ours is an oversight function. Our constitutional function is oversight. We don't want people to bank on us. We want the people to bank on the department, because you are paid to do a job. You are not being asked to do a job. You are paid to do this job. And we said it from the onset, that respond to people, be a responsive department. Respond to questions, to queries, to insults, to whatever that comes from the citizens of this country, because you are paid to do that. Nobody is asking you to do this. You are paid to do this. But up until today, we are still receiving. A lot of queries and complaints and what have you from people because the department is not listening to them. The department is not responding to them. And we are their last hope. It's bad. And as the portfolio committee, we said it from the onset that people can't run to the portfolio committee all the time. Respond as the department. And when they come to us, this is the question that we ask them, have you gone to the department first? And they say, we have proof that we've written to the department, we've spoken to so-and-so in the department, but they are not responding. And it leaves a bad taste in the mouth. It really leaves a bad taste in the mouth. And it looks like we will leave this portfolio committee at the end of this term with that bad taste in our mouth. And it's such a bad, bad thing. It's not a nice way to welcome people, but this is how I feel, really. That it's disheartening for us to sit here and talk about the same thing over and over again. That was my way of welcome. Prof, that was how I was welcoming you because this is how I feel. And really, it's disheartening. But we welcome you, Prof. And we really appreciate the work that you're doing to assist, especially with the white paper. And we were saying that, yeah, we won't see this white paper until we go, but because of all the work, hard work that you've gone through, we do see that the white paper is almost there. And as the portfolio committee, our interest is that consultation has been done and it cannot be questioned. This is our interest as the portfolio committee. As you may remember, that when we first came in, there was a white paper that was presented to us, but we said, no, you have not consulted sufficiently. And this is what we are about, sufficient consultation. And if people have come to you to say, why don't you add this? You need to have reasons for not including whatever they are coming up with. We really appreciate the work that you're doing. That was my welcome. Are there any apologies?
Good morning, members. Good morning, everyone. So we have an apology from the minister who is currently out of the cabinet chair. We also have an apology from the deputy minister who is on a site visit in preparation for the Dr. Cradle Club project launch. We also have an apology from the PG, I think it's the partnership, but from the PG as well, Chair. He's also out of the country. He's returning on the 3rd of March. We also have an apology from Mamu Hood. She's also attending to a family big event. And I think we have an apology from Mamu Hood as well, Chair. And we also have the
thank you very much. Honourable members, those are the apologies. Apologies proposed, accepted. Thank you very much, Honourable members. As I said earlier, that we've received a lot of correspondence in the last week from Tuesday last week up until yesterday, up until this morning, in fact. And some of these are things that I believe that the department should have taken care of without them coming to the portfolio committee. And we've asked questions to the department and we've tried to make sure that the department follows up on these matters. And Chabu, can you just... Yeah, okay. Uchabu will just tell us where this this correspondence is coming from and that's what it's about. Okay.
We received a communication from Mr. Majumza and Mr. Mashudu after the meeting on Tuesday regarding their cases, and they both indicated that the department was not truthful in the representation, but we will forward the information to the DAC. And we also received information, I mean correspondence from Dr. Munareng regarding disconcerting matters on his return to office on the Monday, 18th of February, and also the correspondence from the response from Deputy Minister's office regarding the issues that took place there between himself and the official regarding the, I believe there was just really short regarding the celebration of International Mother Language, International Mother Language. So I've got the correspondence I will forward to the DAC. We also received a communication from, just going through this quickly here, from Ms. Kubuzu regarding the Dini Zulu's exile project, delays in funding for the Dini Zulu project. There's a lot of documents with that one. We received the documents this morning, but Chairperson has the information, and that will be also forwarded to the DAC. So all of this will be forwarded as soon as we know.
There's also correspondence from the Raymond Mhlaba Foundation. Yes. From the Raymond Mhlaba Foundation. Thank you. And as I said earlier, honorable members, ladies and gentlemen, this is not good at all. And as I was looking at this, I was asking myself, what is the work of the department? Maybe if the department, maybe you teach, acting teacher, acting teacher, if you can tell us what the work of the department is. Because, for instance, if you come to the National Library issue, the department has to do oversight. Its responsibility is that of oversight. And we did, Matilda, I did say to her that in your oversight responsibility, you need to ensure that the issues that are being raised there are followed up. And it's really confusing how the department operates, because you find the department coming here to give information to the portfolio committee, giving information about Mashudu or Majumza or whoever. Have you ever consulted these people that you come in here and give a report on? Because I think it's common sense to go, and if you are getting information about Ajabulile, you verify it. Ajabulile, this is the information that I received about you. You verify it. Coming to the portfolio committee, giving us a one-sided story. And this is the result. Now, as the portfolio committee, people are listening to us discussing this matter. And we have one side of the story that we are being fed by the department. What are we supposed to do? Because we said, if you remember very well, Acting DG, even with the case of the ex-political prisoners in Robben Island, there was an issue there where they wrote to us and we said to them, go right to the department. Have you consulted the department on this matter? Go to the department because those are the people that have to deal with the matters. We sent them to the department. The department received whatever they were talking about. And all what the department did was to send, you know, you take this issue, you give them to Robben Island for Robben Island to respond. You take the responses that you are getting from Robben Island, you give them to the people who have raised the matter. I know. Is this how you do things? And we have questioned the DG about that. But how can you do that? To take issues that have been brought to you and you give me the perpetrator to respond, you take my responses, you give it to those people. Is this the way you do things in the department? And those people, those ex-political prisoners, they raised an issue with that. And fortunately, the DG followed up and had a meeting with them. And I think this is how you deal with matters. I mean, you don't have to go to school for this. It's how you deal with matters in your own home, in your own environment. When somebody comes and tells you that this has happened, you have to bring the other person in as well to say, this is what is being said. Tell me your side of the story. And now as the portfolio committee, we have to deal with how the department is addressing matters. We have the story now. We have now the other side of the story from these people that you reported on in our last meeting. It's so clumsy, very clumsy, and totally, totally unacceptable. Totally, totally unacceptable. We can't accept this. As the department, when you are told that somebody has transgressed, you need to call that as the other party so that when you bring information to the portfolio committee, it's balanced. You have heard from both sides. Now they are telling us that those officials lied about us in your portfolio committee. They gave you the wrong perspective of what happened. This is what the people are saying in this. We are going to share those things with you. It's totally unacceptable. And this is what I said to you, Matilda, if you remember, that you need to hear from the other side as well. In the Majumza case, for instance, I said, listen to all the sides so that when you sit as an oversight body, you have both sides of the story. And you need to address this. Otherwise, it's totally unacceptable. In our meeting next week, you must tell us how you have dealt with this. Because if you come here and tell us one side, then you're lying to us. Because you've not heard the other side. What will happen if you hear the other side? We were going to give you this document so that you find time to look at them and deal with them in this coming week, from today, in fact, after the meeting. With the other matter of... Yes, whatever it is. We still have, as the portfolio committee, to be given how applications are handled within DAC. When a proposal comes in, how do you handle it? We don't have that picture at all. Give that to honorable members. Do you have a picture of what happens when an application comes in? at the AC, and we've been asking for this thing. Tell us, here is a proposal. It comes in, then what? What happens? Because there are people who have sent in proposals. The proposals have been approved, acting DG. The people don't receive funding until the very last minute. When I say the very last minute, a minute, when they would, the situation in which you plant our people, the situation in which the Department of Arts and Culture plunges our people is unacceptable. They don't, others are told, postpone your event, we can't give you funding this week. And these people are people who have partners who have paid for marketing, partners who have paid for this and other things, but the department will come in and say postpone it. 200,000 has already been spent on marketing, that is saying the festival starts on the 22nd. This is no way to treat our people. It is no way to treat our people. You are just, and it's so sad. You need to be there to understand this. Mna, I have walked through this with someone. Nanku CFO, yeah. I even called the CFO, but what do these people have to do now? I called the DG. DG, what should they do? Because their booking is being cancelled now, up and down in this venue. What are they supposed to do? So it's not acceptable. You are not assisting our people at all. You are not. And the other matter of pencils, it goes straight to the lines of communication within the department. Lines of communication. Wonke umuntu nje uyacommunicate apa. Wonke umuntu nje ugifela whatever they want to do. What are the lines of, if I want to communicate with pencils, who communicates in the department with pencils? Who communicates with pencils in the department? Because I was shocked when I was forwarded an email from Unomsa, from Deputy Minister's office, Eyaku Dr. Munaren. I was shocked. I could not believe it. Honorable members, I think Ujabu has made a copy for you. I was shocked to the bone. I could not believe it. I want the department to tell us their lines of communication. How do you communicate? Who's supposed to communicate with whom? Have we've been asking for the communication strategy of the department. Have we received it? And when we talk about your communication strategy within the department and with your stakeholders outside the department. So, lay on a indo. And just an official, ithumele ku CEO of an entity, your entity. Lendo, ay madoda ngeke. Honorable members, would you like to say something before they respond? You have a copy of this. You don't have?
No.
Oh, Jabu, Shamu. She forgot to give you. But it's shocking, Aina. Can we have, do you want to say anything, honorable members? Honorable Makonde?
I want to comment about the message that was sent to the CEO of Pencils. I'm not so sure if you have read the message. You just received it now. Well, I was just going through my cell phone messages when I came across it, and I read it, and I freeze. The language that it used there, I don't think we accept that kind of language in government. It's not even informal. It has gone beyond. We can't allow that to happen in government. Even if we have got an issue with you, we must treat you in the manner that is acceptable in the public service. I want to complain to you as the acting DG, and I will also complain to the minister that you can't have this type of communications in government. It's very bad. Something needs to be done with it, Chair. The language is so scary. It has gone beyond personal. Please look at it. You come before us here as portfolio committee members. We fight over work, but it has never been personal. Please look at it. That's the request that I want. Thanks.
Thank you, Honorable Member. Honorable Member,
Honorable
Mr. Hoffman, you were looking at me like you want to say something.
No, Chair, I'm just as shocked and perturbed as you are about this matter. So let me reserve that comment, because I'm still trying to understand the anger of this official. I don't know who the official was. Was it in the official capacity or what?
Chairperson, thank you. I want to suggest or to comment that those who are tired, let them retire with me. I am really tired. Let them retire with me and give the work over to those who want to work. If you don't want to work, mabayeke. There are so many people there outside that only need that sister thing. Please, mabayeke. Because this is not serving the people. And this is not bringing us any more. And sesifana neparlamente edlalayo. Portfolio committee, which is playing gomgoba, and we cannot be absent. We at Parliament, as well as absent, please let them excuse us. Bauhela na meka na namato.
Thank you, Honourable Member. We are going to give you an opportunity, Acting DG, to respond to the issues that you have raised. Just briefly.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members of the Committee. Let me first thank the Chairperson for bringing these matters to our attention, but also for even indicating that we'll be given an opportunity to respond to some of the matters that have brought to our attention, but also to also indicate, Chairperson, that, and I'm just receiving this correspondence now, And I just think that it is a very serious matter that needs to be brought to the attention of our tribunal, but also to report and leave no stone unturned in terms of what the portfolio committee has said to us. We have heard you. We will take matters as you have expressed to us. Chairperson, I fully agree that it will not be appropriate, or it is not appropriate, that people are, or people's projects are approved, and after approval, money is not provided. But I want to also indicate, Chairperson, because I just think that we'll have to deal with these matters case by case. And I'm sure that there will be cases where we will be found in the wrong as a department. But there will be cases which I also think that the beneficiary might be found in the wrong. I'll indicate why I'm saying so. There are instances, Chairperson, whenever the MOU agreed upon and signed between the department and the beneficiary, the specific requirements and expectations that are outlined in there. And I'm not going to get into many details, but I'm just going to talk to just one fundamental issue: accounting for money that is being paid to a beneficiary. The first tranche is given when it's a granting date. But before a final tranche is paid, the MOU will then say, you shall report. And in that reporting, we will expect a narrative report which then indicates how project was done. There shall be a proof of expenditure, invoices attached. Once you have done that, then the second tranche needs to be paid. Now, I'm saying that's the normal requirement that would be enshrined in the MOU. If a person has done that, then we are not paying the department. Then we are in the wrong. But if the person has not fulfilled the obligations of the MOU, it becomes very difficult to a person, because it would mean that as the government officials, we are not protecting the interests of the state, and we are not protecting the coffers of the state. So that I just thought that, let me highlight that point, Chairperson, to say here we would have to treat these matters case by case. Where we are in the wrong as a department, I just think that we need to really see how we manage that internally. But where the beneficiary has not met the requirement as agreed upon in the MOU, and I just think that that particular beneficiary will have to fulfill that before the department can then pay. Chair, I just think that on matters of communication, more particularly with institutions, I think that these matters have been given depth with pencil, where, of course, the DG as the head of the department is the one who normally communicates with the CEO, but there is also the DDG responsible for institutions, who has the delegated power, you know, because we cannot expect the DG on a day-to-day basis, just work for so many institutions, but the DDG responsible is the one who then deals with that. I think in this case, it's a specific case of a particular project which the organization was maybe going to be working with the DM, And of course, it is within this context that you have this official communicating. Of course, I would have seen the communication. That is not the communication that you would expect to happen between, in the civil service. We just put it that way, in the civil service. So, but I think that the issue of communication, the DG, in the absence of the DG, the DDG, who then communicates. Chairperson, you have asked a very difficult question. It might take me the whole day maybe to say what the department does, because there is a lot of work that we do, from policy development to research, coordination, if you look at the work that we're doing with the South African Cultural Observatory. We also do oversight, Chairperson, which this committee has really, really worked very hard with us, guiding us in terms of matters of oversight, why it is important for the department to be on the ball all the time when things are happening within the institution and the performance of the institution. So that's one of our responsibilities. But we also do program work, for instance, the Zanzibar Golden Economy project. We do legacy project in the form of infrastructure. We also do manage the library conditional grant, which is about the rollout of the library information services infrastructure in the province, with a view to transforming the library landscape, but also ensuring that we promote the culture of reading and writing in the country. But also ensuring that those areas like rural areas and peri-urban areas that were deprived of these services are actually provided with those kinds of services. Chairperson, we also deal with matters of language services, which is about translation of documents into indigenous languages. We do also develop new terminologies to ensure that our indigenous languages are able to operate at the level of English and Afrikaans, where you can theorize about it. You can write economic theories, philosophical theories, and so on. That's the work that the department is actually doing. And of course, the archival services in the department is one of the areas where we look at the records, government records, as well as the records that are of high historical value in the department. But of course, the funding of projects is one of the key matters that we deal with. And I'm sure the chairperson and members of the committee would agree that most of the challenges that we are confronted with are within that space of funding, where there's a lot of tension between the department and the beneficiary, for reasons that I've stated, where I'm not necessarily absolving the department where it needs to take responsibility. I would like to maybe pause there, and also, Chairperson, maybe before I pause, there are matters that are of sensitive nature, more particularly when it comes to matters that include colleagues that you mentioned in the National Library of South Africa. We might just need to get the correspondence that comes from these colleagues, and then maybe compare that with what we might have reported to the committee and see where there are discrepancies. Maybe let me stop there, unless some of my colleagues might just want to come in where I might have left out.
I think what you also raised earlier regarding the National Library and the oversight that we spoke about, I think what Ms. Ndima is saying in terms of the individuals that you need to to look at. But I would like to say to the chairperson, I'm not sure if I was not here last week. It was reported in terms of the work that we've done in the library itself, that, you know, we met with the staff, we also met with the management, then we met with both staff and management, I think 2 weeks ago. And, I mean, the issues that came up there, and we said to management, you need to respond. We'll tell you what the staff has said about you and about what they think is not going right. And you need to respond directly. We're not going to say to them, you said this, but respond directly to them. And we had a video link with the Cape Town campus. And the meeting took, you know, more than 3 hours. And I think after that, they said, the staff, they were so thankful that, you know what, we thank the department for already being here and assisting in this process. And from there, from now on, you know, this is our responsibility and management to take the process forward. But if there's anything, we'll then come back to. So we have facilitated that process with the staff and management. And yes, we will also, I think, with what the activity say in terms of those individual cases, but the staff, I'm not sure if anything came after that. Thank you.
But with the issue that I raised, that when bringing information to the portfolio committee, bringing one side of the story and being challenged as the portfolio committee now, that you have only one side of the story. And for us to do the work of the department as the portfolio committee is not acceptable, because we believe that this should be done by the department, not us. You are the ones who have to listen to both sides of it. When it comes to the portfolio committee, it should be something that is beyond whoever, you know? So I think it's important that when you give us a story, give us a balanced story. Otherwise, if you give us as the committee a one-sided story, what do you expect us to do? To make decisions and have deliberations on a one-sided thing? It's not fair to the portfolio committee to be given one side of the story. It's not fair at all. Another proposal? Do you want to say anything? You're fine. Okay. Honorable members, so you're taking that into cognizance as well, acting teacher. On the issue that you are raising of reporting, I mean, all of us here as the portfolio committee, we know exactly how government functions. You can't give a person who has not reported funding. You cannot do that. But with the people that I'm talking about that have their proposals approved by the department. Now, CFO, I even called CFO to say, what is this person supposed to do? And the event is today. And it's an event that is not starting today. The process started long ago. Tell us how these things are processed in the department so that we have a picture briefly. When a proposal comes in, this is what happens. Kasi Velunda.
Chairperson, through you, can I request one of my colleagues to address the matter? Thank you.
Good morning, Chairperson. Good morning, honorable members. With regards to applications and proposals, we get proposals after we have done roadshows. We also get proposals, people responding to open calls, where we say from now on the proposals are open. Then the proposals comes to the office and some people drop them physically near a box at the ground floor where they put all these proposals there. Then from there, proposals are then looked at, sifted, in terms of where they come from, provincially, various disciplines, the various music, theater, visual arts, they are all categorized, then given a number, a reference number to say this proposal is from Northern Cape, this is the number, this is the discipline. And then that is the initial process. And then you also look at that point, you look at compliance documents, whether everything has been included. That talks about, you know, are you registered, you have a bank, tax clearance, and all these things. Then after that, the committee sits, the panel sits and go through all those proposals and approve according based on the MGE criteria. Then they make recommendation to the DG that is that you, this is recommended the amount from this pro, and then we give a spreadsheet in terms of geographical spread so that we try to balance. Yes. Okay. The MGE guidelines indicate that we must meet quarterly, every other quarter, the panel. But in the last year or two, we have had a backlog in terms of, because you meet the first quarter, you adjudicate, you approve, it goes. Within that quarter, supposed to have it. But what has happened, the third quarter, we realize that by the time people apply, there's not enough resources, enough money left to service everything. So then you start a new year with that backlog. So that disorganized in terms of the quarterly meeting. But ideally, when a person, for instance, you apply in January, or within a space of 3 to 4 months, you should have received the response. But there's been a challenge to meet that deadline. The reason being, when applications comes in, when people generally apply, some are CCs in terms of company, it's a CC company, another one is a PTY, another one is a non-profit organization. They are all those categories. So when you approve, because the budget of the department is also structured that way, you know, you have money in the CCs, money in the NPOs. So when you approve, as you are sitting, you don't know how many CCs are you going to get or how many NPOs are you going to get. So by the time you have approved anything, then you go to budget, to budget, you realize that you need, therefore, to adjust even internally in terms of the resources you have so that you cover most of the people. I mean, currently now, towards the end of a financial year, we have run out of money from PTYs. We have money on NPOs. Then you find that the people that are waiting for money, they're waiting for PTYs, we don't have money there. So those are budgetary constraints that we have internally. So that has been a process. But after the DG has approved, then we send letters to beneficiaries, then we start drafting the first contract so that it's vetted, it sends to a beneficiary, we sign, it comes to us, we sign, it's vetted for the second time, and we make sure that then it goes to, it submit all the documents required to go to Treasury to make sure that the person is registered in the central database system. So that process is outside the department, it's with National Treasury. So when the person is vetted there, it's only then they create what they call an item. That is National Treasury, it's not within. It's only after an item has been created, then you can then say a person can be paid. But the entire thing is a process, because some of the things are within us, some of the things are outside.
How long does it take? How long does this whole process
take? The whole process, depending on when you, it will take up to 3 months to do the entire process. For instance, Honorable Chairperson, we said in September, last year in September, we went through the whole adjudication process. The challenge was that the amount of applications that we received and the amount of money that was required, we did not have that money with us at September last year. We went to the DG and said, we can't proceed because we don't. And the issue was that let's wait for Viamet. So it's another process. Maybe the CFO can explain that process. It generally takes longer, but 3 months is the most realistic period. And there are, of course, like Mr. Ndiba said, the specific cases where we can't even pay, like the case you have raised, the Kubu matter, is now taking us almost 2 years dealing with that matter up and down because of compliance issues. I'm not sure if I'm responding, but that is the state of play.
Yes, I think in the new processes, because the MGE beneficiaries is a transfer payment. In previous years, Treasury used to allow the department to create transfer items for the beneficiaries. But if you look at the requirements of the PFMA, it says any new transfer must be approved by National Treasury. So meaning that they are supposed to create that new transfer item. And that process, they introduce it in the current financial year. So it therefore means if you receive an application now and want to do a transfer, you can do all your internal processes. But then before you do that transfer, Treasury must now create that new beneficiary on the system so that they are able to be paid and recognized in the transfer payment. And this process takes a little bit longer because sometimes you send them 20 applications for them to create a system on the GL, on the General Ledger Payment System. And National Treasury, they are not necessarily, the budget office is not responsible for the General Ledger creation of items. It's another unit at Treasury which is sitting at Centurion for that man, working to, so there's a lot of processes that are being done to create an item. But when we went to Treasury in June to discuss the challenges, we said we can't be creating items that should benefit in that financial year because it takes us longer. So we came into to the agreement that application and proposal for this year must be received, all of them that will benefit in the new financial year. So that when the budget is approved, you have also approved the beneficiary. So it does not have to take you longer to pay these beneficiaries because without that check, we will remain where we are if we don't change to that system. And now we have asked the MG unit to submit all the details of the beneficiaries for the new financial aid. And in that way, when a beneficiary receives the letter, already their details are in the system. And that, I think, will solve our problem. And Treasury are willing to assist us in order to know the beneficiaries in advance, so that the planning for their events can also be done in advance, unlike the way we are doing it now.
Okay, I hope that the new system works because the old one has destroyed your credibility in our community. Your credibility has just been destroyed with your old system. And where we are expected to intervene, because people are panicking, they don't know when the money will be deposited. And we have to run around like headless chicks, calling the CFO, calling the DG, asking when the money is going to be, you know, a transfer. So I think your new system may work for you if you ensure that the work is done properly.
Just to inform the portfolio, as part of trying to address those challenges, like we said, I think, in the last 3 weeks of the portfolio, we have set up a grant management system electronically which we are launching tomorrow, Thursday, this coming Thursday, it will be open to the public. So at least what it will do, it will track and trace. It will give you a reference, it will send you an SMS. You are in a position, a reference number, so you can track throughout as you call to say number 18, where am I? So it also will ensure that within internally there are no bottlenecks, because the system will tell you, say, it's here, it's here, it's here. So we hope it will also work, because the manual system was generally a problem. And also the fact that we'll then now submit beneficiaries in advance to Treasury so that the grid is active. So we hope it will work.
Thank you very much. Let us then proceed to receive the presentation on the white paper. And as I said earlier, Prof, that we've had this presentation from you, and our obligation as the Portfolio Committee is to ensure that there have been enough consultation, so that the white paper is not passed today and tomorrow there are things that come up that are opposing what is there. And after you had presented to the Portfolio Committee, there are institutions that have come forward to say that there are sections in the white paper that are working against us as this entity. So even then I said, send the information. If you feel strongly that this is going to happen, send the information back to the department so that they can deal with the matter. So I think the week Ujabu called them and they said they have sent the information to the department of those areas that they want addressed. I think our interest is to hear that these were received and this is how you have catered for them, or if it's, because it's not possible to cater for everybody and for everything, it's not possible. But if you, when you don't cater for that particular input, you have reasons not to do that. So that it can stand wherever it is sent, that the reason why we couldn't include is because 1, 2, and 3. Because I know that there are instances where people have, after you have completed it, have come up with issues, and those issues were incorporated in the white paper. So there were these two institutions, and these are not institutions from out there. One is the entity of the department. And my surprise was that an entity of the department was part and parcel of the whole process. And why would they, at the end, say, we've raised the matters, but the matters have not been considered? So I thought it's important for us to get that, because at the end of the day, as the Portfolio Committee, we have to stand there and be confident that consultation was done to the team. Over to you, Prof.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think that the question that has been posed right now, it kind of put me in a difficult situation, but I will go through the presentation as per the expectations of the committee, and I'm glad that Professor is here. And the way I'm now going to handle this presentation, I will just focus on those areas that are required, because the presentation that we prepared is kind of a wholesome presentation. Which then begins to even look at the philosophical foundation of the policy. But I think I would kind of focus on the iterative processes that were followed to ensure that there is consultation with various stakeholders. If you so allow me, Chairperson, and other members of the committee, there is a presentation in front of us. I will then just go straight to slide 5 that begins to address the specific issues that the committee is actually interested in. So we're saying here, following the first national INDABA in November 2015, the following working plan was adopted in February 2016. The first provisional draft for internal discussion was done end of March 2016. The subsector public consultation happened April to June 2016. Now, Chairperson, we are talking about the subsectors. We're now talking about the small segments within arts, culture, and heritage landscape. It would be your heritage-related matters. It would be your creative industries. But within the creative industries, you deal with issues of music, deal with issues of craft. So the subsector consultations were aimed at ensuring that we're able to get to the finer details, minute details of this kind of work. And in terms of our program here, that was done between April to June 2016. The revised second draft, based on public input now, was done end of July 2016. Second draft was circulated on 31 August 2016. And I must also indicate, Chairperson, that this work that was being circulated to all the stakeholders within the arts, culture, and heritage. Revisions made based on public consultations from September to November 2016. And this included the presentation to the Technical Intergovernmental Committee, as well as the Portfolio Committee. National Sector INDABA was held on 17 and 18 November 2016. And we did broaden this consultation. I mean, these INDABA were actually were meant to ensure that people who wanted to further make inputs were given that opportunity of making inputs. Then on 27 February 2016, an inception report was discussed, revised, and adopted, outlining the scope and recommendations of the 1996 white paper, identifying obstacles to transformative policy implementation, identifying new trends in cultural policy, proposing the methodology and process. Public consultations in 9 provinces, April 2016 until June 2016. Consultations were requested with multiple government departments because of the realization, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members, that we are not an island as arts, culture, and heritage. There are interconnectivities between the work that we do with other government departments. For instance, the Department of Basic Education, Higher Education, Science and Technology. Consultations were held with national agencies and institutions, as well as provincial arts, culture, and heritage departments, because of a very clear understanding that the policy would have implications and ramifications for all these institutions. The need for an integrated national, provincial, and local system emerged from this process. The first draft was completed in August 2016. The second draft was completed in November 2016 and tabled at the national INDABA, the one that I spoke about, 17 and 18 November 2016. The sector was invited to make their submissions until December 2016. The third draft was finalized on 3 February 2017. The fourth draft finalized October 2017. Briefings to the Portfolio Committee was done in March 2017 and November 2018. So there has been a briefing that has been happening in the committee. Now, I do not want to get to this one, the overview of the revised white paper, because already we have actually, the committee has indicated that they are more interested in the consultative process. But I just think that if we can go to slide number 9. Yes.
Sorry to interject, DJ. I would prefer that you do go over this. The process is clear, but this is to me, but this is important.
Okay, thank you. Then let me just go to now slide number 7, which I think that Honorable Court Womb is drawing my attention to. Now, the overview of the revised white paper. What does it include? The draft material included background and scope, objectives, values, vision and principles, policy proposals for the arts, culture and heritage subsectors, community arts, culture and heritage, education and training, status and rights of artists, new institutional arrangements, arts, that is the African art, culture and heritage, education and training, diplomacy and international cooperation, technical skills and events management. One of the areas that has been, there's been an outcry on this particular area that the previous white paper did not actually include this particular matter. Language and literature, libraries and information services, cultural, creative, heritage industries, heritage, new funding models, intergovernmental cooperation, monitoring and evaluation, and core roles and functions of the national department. Then the new dispensation, which is actually being proposed. National Arts and Audiovisual Council, and the Prof will talk to this. Heritage and Book Councils, Technical Skills Academy, African Art, Culture and Heritage Centers. And the South African National Art and Audiovisual Council, Performing Arts and Craft and Design, Creative Writing and Audio. Oh my goodness. Let me use my the hard copy. Can I get my hard copy? It's always good to behave like a coward, because a coward would carry the knob gearing, the gun and everything, so that exactly. Thank you. South African National Heritage Council, which would include museums, monuments, heritage resources and sites, geographical names, heraldry, archives, libraries and information services. Additional clusters for existing national museums and provinces. There was a proposal. Heritage institutions in the Free State, KwaZulu-Natal and Eastern Cape be consolidated, and that all national museum councils be abolished, and that national museums be governed by the National Heritage Council. The South African Book and Publishing Development Council. This is envisaged to be constituted by one representative each from publishing, printing, book trade, authors, editors, translators, basic education, higher education, small business development. The South African National Academy of Technical Skills and Events Management to develop professional training in sound, lighting, stage, power, audiovisual, rigging, recording, and production skills. South African Center for African Art, Culture and Heritage. This to include project evaluation and funding, policy advice, monitoring, and sector development. So that's the essence of some of the recommendations that are being envisaged through this revised white paper. Now, the Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members of the Committee would recall that as part of the requirement of taking this paper through, we needed to do the socio-economic impact assessment. So the department and the reference panel agreed that the South African Cultural Observatory was to conduct the socio-economic impact assessment study of the revised white paper on arts, culture and heritage. It commenced in April 2017. First draft produced in August 2017. Submission of revised impact assessment report February 2018, there were also in the interdepartmental consultation on the socio-economic impact assessment. These were done in April 2018 with the Department of Trade and Industry, Science and Technology, Department of Basic Education and Department of Higher Education and Training. Reports to the Department of Monitoring and Evaluation submitted in May and June 2018. The provisional certificate was issued in August to allow the department to present to the Social Protection, Community and Human Development Cluster, the SPCHD. And then the presentation to the SPCHD cluster was done in August 2018 and tabling in Parliament on 12 October 2018. This is what was then, maybe if we say tabling in Parliament, we're saying when this approved white paper by Cabinet being presented now to the Portfolio Committee for consideration. And then also there was a final briefing in terms of the progress that had been made that was done in October and November 2018 to the departmental institutions. So I would like to stop there, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members and of course my colleagues and the professors would actually come in where required. Thank you.
Thank you very much,
Chairperson. Thank you, Chairperson, and good afternoon to all the honorable members of the committee. I want to start with the issue that you raised, the Chairperson raised, in relation to, you know, a serious matter about people not being happy with this or not being happy with that. I received an email which I think was distributed to various other interested parties by SOFSA in relation to what they call their exclusion. Now, the chairperson or the president of SOFSA was appointed by the minister to be part of the reference panel. He came to two or three meetings, never opened his mouth, or made any contributions. And then when the draft was developing, they raised their concern. And we convened a meeting in the Department of Arts and Culture where we discussed this matter. And I pointed out to him, there are many entities in this country, many organizations and programs which receive funding from DAC, but we can't put all of these organizations into the white paper. What the white paper makes provision for in Chapter 6, dealing with the social status and the economic rights of art, culture, and heritage practitioners is that they have the right to form discipline associations. In other words, you can form a national association for visual artists or national association for heritage practices or for literature. These are civil society-based institutions, initiatives made by the citizens. These are not statutory bodies. They cannot be on the same level as the National Arts Council or the National Heritage Council. But the policy recognizes the right to do so and to form federations. If you look at Chapter 6 of the White Paper, to form a federal structure. And they qualify for funding from DAC. But if we put one association's name into the policy document, then the others are also going to be included. So there is a provision, a very clear provision made to recognize such bodies and for DAC to continue to fund them. But the impression that we got is that they wanted to prescribe to the reference panel and impose their view and their interests on the old policy framework In fact, I said they're trying to capture the policy process for their own interest. So they wrote again to me, and I said to them, please, let's arrange for another meeting, and we will meet again at DAC, because I replied very politely to them. And I'll explain this to them again, and I read that section out in chapter 6. So they are recognized, and the right they have to form associations is recognized by the draft white paper. It doesn't appear in the existing white paper. So that's how we dealt with that. But their demand is they want to see written into the white paper their name. My name is not in the white paper. You know, it doesn't appear there. In other words, I was just doing the work for the sector, but I can't write the white paper so that I benefit from it personally, or Professor Nkondo. And I think Professor Nkondo can testify to this. Matilda was also at the meeting where we met to discuss this matter. So they will complain, and they will continue complaining, because what they want cannot be given to them, unfortunately. But if you do it for one organization, we have to do it for everybody. So that's the main point I would like to make. We went out of our way to listen to what people want. We went through four iterations in order to accommodate comments. We even postponed the submission of the policy process to give extra time for people, because some complained and said they missed some of the sessions. So we did the consultation work. And I think the department will need the advice and assistance of the portfolio committee to thresh out this matter with the disgruntled sector, so that it's explained how the white paper is and that there is no attempt to deny them the right to apply for funding and to qualify for funding.
But I think what's important is that you have a record of those meetings that you've had with them. You know, pointing out whatever they were pointing out, and with the panel explaining to them. I think you need that record so that whatever happens, you are able to say, voila, we did, you know. So I'm hoping that there is a record to that effect. Honorable Foto?
Thank you, Chair. I just want to ask a question or two. I gather that SIFSA is a Section 21 company, and seemingly it seems that they want to put themselves, or they want to take over the role of the National Arts Council in terms of their positioning. The other question that I would like to ask is first to the protection of the performance protection bill. Now, to what extent does that particular bill not accommodate, speak to what is being proposed within the white paper? Maybe I just need some little bit of clarity there, because when it came to this particular bill, we were invitees. It was done by a different portfolio committee, and we were not per se involved.
Thank you. For the question, yes, it's the intellectual property right Protection Bill, which covers all the arts. It covers trademarks and other types of property. It resides with the Department of Trade and Industry. Because of the arts is a critical part of it. The Department of Arts and Culture must make inputs on that bill, and there are some controversies that have developed around the bill. It relates to access. There are two camps. The one camp wants to take your music, my literature, and distribute it freely. And the other camp wants a balance, wants to create a balance between access, people must be able to access information and the arts, and the protection of your rights, your intellectual rights. It's your music. It's not my music. I can just do with it what I want, because I'll be violating your economic interests. So there's a tension now in the process, and the bill has been referred back for further consultations, because the state in which it is now, in relation to the blanket access, has created various problems, and publishers and writers have indicated that if this matter is not resolved, they will have to go to court to protect their interests. So that is where the situation is. I myself have not become directly involved in, the task team has not become involved in that copyright process. But in the white paper, we stipulate the classical rights that have been established for centuries in relation to your right to economic activity, your right to be rewarded for your work, and so forth and so on. So that is covered. We look at the status of the arts and heritage practitioners, that they must be respected, they must be seen as professionals, they must be, not be subjected to abuse and exploitation. And then the intellectual property rights, just two legs on which that chapter rests.
That's fine. I was just getting an interest on the issue that relates to this. But I just wanted to I just want us, all of us, including the department and the panel, you see the process of this process that we are engaging, there will be a lot of interest. It will draw a lot of interest from various corners. But what is very important is to assure this interest as they come in, so that they don't stall the process. That's what I wanted to say, Chair, that you might have seen with the minimum wage process, chairs were flying because people were not ascertained in terms of whether their interests are going to be covered going forward. So it's very important that we assure them they don't have to be, because what we want is to reduce the number of entities that we have in this country. We can't afford to have when we are reducing, others want to just throw themselves in. It's very difficult to manage. So let's try to assure their interest, and we convince them, no, even if you are not here, but your interests are catered for. But because in the main, it's our interest to be catered into the process. Thanks.
Thank you for the advice.
The issue of, did you receive anything from Sarah with an H?
now?
On this matter? Is it only SIFSA? Because they are the ones who raised issues. Mm-hmm. And they said they should raise the issue with SARA.
Without an age.
Yes, Heritage Resources Agency. They are the ones who raise matters, saying that there are areas that are problematic for them as an entity. So I said they should be raised as with the department, and which are we saying that they raise the matters. Can you?
I was just going to suggest that it be brought to the office of the DG rather than the entity's management unit, because the process, the whole process has been coordinated from corporate services, not from the branch that's dealing with entities. So we haven't received anything on our side.
As I said earlier, I was surprised because an entity of the department should have been, you know, in the process,
mm-hmm.
should have been part of the mm-hmm. process. And if they were part of the process and they feel that they still have things to raise, then you are like, really? Were they not listened to what actually happened? Mm-hmm. But I think as we will follow it up. And Prof, do you want to say something?
Yes, I was at two meetings specifically with SARA in the building down here in Cape Town, where we went over the proposed policies. We met with all the entities because we cannot impose policy on anybody. We must work it out together. If you look at the 1996 white paper, which I have mentioned at some point, and you look at the chapter on heritage, the chapter on heritage recommends a national heritage council that consists of all these divisions, as it is set out in our proposals here. It's in the 1996 white paper to create an integrated system. But it was never implemented. They kept the old colonial fragmentation and just ignored the country's policy, the government's policy. So all that was done in this white paper is to reassert what was asserted in 1996. It's not new, but they don't want to work together. And you know the big problems we have with our heritage, public heritage in this country, slow transformation, the continued exclusions. And if you look at the work of SARA and you look at the work of the National Heritage Council, the one sits in Pretoria, the other one sits in Johannesburg, and they both deal with public monuments. Their work overlaps. And there's no coordination in the heritage sector. So it's not... I can't see what else they may find problematic, other than the fact that they don't want to be brought into the jurisdiction of the National Heritage Council. We don't have for the arts a council for music, a council for painting, a council for literature. There's an arts council with its subdivisions. The film sector, you don't have a council for directors and a council for screenwriters. It's all of them are served within the same body. But heritage is fragmented. And it is conservative people, I'm sorry to say, with the old mindset. Once we were finished with the policies, they simply resisted the change. And I don't know why that allowed them to do so. They should just have read that the law said we can't do that.
Thank you, Prof. And I think you're raising a very important point, especially at the end, that sometimes we have good policies, but they're never implemented. And why?
Yeah.
You know? That's a very serious one. We have good policies, they are not being implemented. Absolutely.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I just thought that let me also take advantage of this meeting to report to the Portfolio Committee that on Thursday, we have the CEO's Forum, as Honorable Makondo rightly said, that the issue of reduction of institutions is something that needs to be done. So we are now doing the feasibility. But before that work happens on feasibility, we've called our institution to come and be introduced to the idea of the amalgamation of institutions, so that whenever they are conducted by our people that we have appointed to do the feasibility, there is that direct interaction, and they do not just see people coming to them without those people being introduced. Now, I just want to say, Chairperson, honorable members, that I think first and foremost we just have to look at the ideal, which I think all of us we agree on. There needs to be better coordination of the center. There needs to be the reduction of the multiplicity of institutions that are sometimes doing duplicating effort. Now, this feasibility study is going to be a very scientific approach towards doing that work, so that it's going to look at the pros and cons of this, what can be integrated, what can actually be, and the timing, I mean, how are you going to be doing it in such a way that it does not disrupt the work of institutions. So I just thought that it's very important that we share with the committee that we continue to work with our institution in trying to ensure that we start implementing the provisions of the white paper, the revised white paper.
We have got a problem in South Africa. As when we transform, people look at institutions as individuals. They don't look at institutions on their own. So you need to address that particular point as you meet with them. We don't want to have a situation where when we discuss about National Heritage Council, we talk about an individual and not an institution. So that needs to be addressed.
Chairperson, I think that Honorable Makonda has covered me. It was just to check out also, as we have all institutions together under one roof, there is the institution or a group that is very much problematic, and it's the group of the less disabled people. Are they part of you?
Thank you. Thank you, honorable member. We do have, let me just also just start by saying that the work that affects people living with disability, it cuts across all institutions. It's a transversal kind of work. But we do also have an institution that is solely designed to deal with people with who living with blindness. For instance, the South African Library for the Blind, which is in Makanda, in the Eastern Cape, which is actually turning 100 years this year. It deals specifically with people with disabilities. So we're not leaving out that particular responsibility.
Thank you very much. And I think what we need to do now is just check the information that Sarah with an H gave to the department, and then we will look at it. But I think ours is to, as I said earlier, as the portfolio committee, is to ensure that there has been effective communication and consultation. And then it goes back to the department for the department to present it after we've gone through the process.
Mm-hmm.
of checking at your consultation, it goes back to you and it goes to cabinet, and then we will, as the portfolio committee, maybe it will be, yes, when it comes back from you, it will be final and it will just be tabled as a white paper. So I think we've done our job as the portfolio committee. If you can just, this last nuts and bolts to ensure, you know, prevail in your communication, your consultation, because this is one thing that can be problematic, but to have proof that we've done it and people came to us and wanted more, and the reason why we couldn't include it is 1, 2, and 3, so that we have it in black and white. I think that's important, because we will want everything to be included while really it cannot be. So I think it's important for us to do that. And your national days, where is your human rights day?
In Sharpeville.
Sharpeville, okay. And your 27th?
It looks like 28th, so it may be way, but it seems to be.
Okay, and what else? Okay. Yeah, I think it's important for members to know, especially if it's going to be in our provinces, for us to support, as we have always said that we'd like to support some of the activities. And we would like, I think we are done. But the issues that are coming up, man, on corruption in your entity department, man, you are and what about the 8 million? prepare yourself. Next week we want to hear all about this. So prepare yourself, because we want to ensure that, as I said earlier, we have our legacy report pointed, and so that the new committee that comes in knows exactly the areas that we have left hanging. So, I see everyone. Okay. Thank you very much, honorable members, for availing yourselves for this meeting. Officials from the AC, thank you. Prof, thank you very much for the wonderful work that you've done, and we will see each other next Tuesday. The venue will be announced. Thank you very much. Which one?
The presentation of the MGE.
Oh, Honorable Khosom, I thought that it's linked to the process, or do you want, are there specific projects that you want to?
No.
Because the main interest was the process that gets us to here, and the way people are grieved out there, because I think it's something that has to be addressed as soon as possible. So if you have any questions, on this, we will accommodate them in our next meeting. Just look at, have a look at this and note the questions. Charles, do you want to say something?
No, it was a suggestion that maybe next week we could actually, in writing, present the entire process, including the new changes that have happened.
Because people ask us about this thing, and they are like, we don't really know, you know, which is not good for any of us. In our provinces, people ask, and again, we still have a National Assembly. People from all over the country ask us, and you are like, hey, ask us, nothing, I'm late. And now the red look bad. So thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned. I'm going to go to the next one.
No, but I'm not sure about that. You have to be there.